Hello and welcome back to the KPMG Financial Reporting Podcast. I'm your host, Nick Tricarci, and we are officially 1 week away from the presidential election. This is actually the second episode that we've done on the election and how it can impact financial reporting. The first was on the tax policy proposals of each candidate and how they could significantly impact your bottom line. So if you haven't listened to that one, please go ahead and check it out. You can find it on Apple, Spotify, and Amazon. On this episode, I'm joined by our SEC topic team leader, Tim Brown. We discuss how the election could shape the next 4 years of the SEC's rulemaking agenda. We start by explaining how the SEC is structured and why the president is so influential on its rulemaking agenda. Then we talk about whether we think we'll have a new chair of the SEC. And then we bust out our magic eight ball to predict what might happen in the future based on who wins in November, including, of course, the future of the climate goal. Tim Brown, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Nick. Really happy to be here with you.
Yeah, I know you're a busy guy these days, and you just did our annual comment letter webcast, which is obviously one of our most popular events for the year. So I want to start by asking you to just give a quick plug on that for some of our listeners who may not have seen it.
Yeah, and hopefully if you didn't have the opportunity to join us, you can watch one of the replays of the webcast. It'll be available to everyone. It was a great webcast, and we looked at really what did the SEC review during 2024 in their filing review process, what were the comment letter trends that we saw, and what do we expect coming in 2025 as well.
Which is the perfect segue into our podcast today, because we're going to keep that theme going of looking into the future. It's almost like we planned it that way, Tim. But, you know, I want to look beyond comment letter trends and talk about the future of the SEC's rulemaking agenda itself. However, before we do that, I want you to give us a quick history lesson about the commission itself, both in terms of how the SEC is structured, which I think will be important context for our topic today. And also what its regulatory approach has been under different administrations over the last, let's just say, 8 years or so. So, Tim, let me ask you by first just explaining, how is the SEC structured?
Sure, Nick. It's a great question. The SEC has five commissioners, and it has to include one chairperson. The way that the SEC is structured, in order to try and limit the amount of political influence at the SEC, there are actually three commissioners that are from one political party, and then there's two that will come from the minority party. And that's really determined by who sits in the White House, which political party sits in the White House, because the president, on the consent and advice of the Senate, appoints the chair of the SEC. And so the chair always aligns with that political party.
Okay. And as it relates to that chair role specifically, does that come with any special powers?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you want to call him Superman or Superwoman, but I think that the chair really drives the agenda of the commission. So when we think about who the chairperson is going to be of the SEC, it's really important from that perspective. What does the agenda for their term look like? And usually that term could last up till the 4 years or even beyond when that president is elected, right? So it does become a crucial decision point as to who that chairperson becomes.
Yeah, so the president appoints the chair. We've established that. And the chair sets the agenda for the SEC, which is then going to drive what the commissioners ultimately vote on. Is that right, from a rulemaking perspective?
Yes, yeah, so it drives really what the staff is working on, you know, and which rules get put up to be proposed, which rules get put up to be finalized. And that really drives where the direction of the SEC heads during that period of time.
Perfect. So this election next week, I think it's pretty clear why it's so important, right? And why we're talking about how the SEC's priorities could change. Because if we have a change in president, that could result in a change in direction of the SEC. All right. So speaking of chairs again, I've got a little trivia question for you. Can you tell me the last time the chair of the SEC served two consecutive terms?
Wow, Nick, that's a tough one. I might just throw something out there. Maybe Arthur Levitt. I know it's been a while, so.
You nailed it, man. You nailed it. Arthur Levitt. And bonus question, who was the president during Arthur Levitt's term.
Well, that would have been Bill Clinton. So that one I knew just because of the name, but
I think maybe you should be on Jeopardy instead of this podcast. You might be able to win some money. All right. So the reason I say that, right, is because since then we've had a bunch of changes in administrations, and every single time we've had a change in the chair of the SEC. But on top of that, we've actually had two presidents get reelected for second terms, right? George Bush and Barack Obama. And even in those cases where we literally had the same person in the White House, we had a different chair of the SEC for their second term as compared to their first term. So where I'm going with this is it seems to me that no matter who wins in November, we're likely looking at a new chair of the SEC at some point in the next year or so. Would you agree?
Yes, I think that's the expectation at this point. So it is likely that we're going to have a new chair, and either way, likely we're going to have some sort of a shift in the agenda of the SEC.
All right. And before we get into that and what the next 4 years looks like, I do want to spend just a little bit more time in the past, because if history really does repeat itself, we've got some pretty good recent experience to look to, right? If we just look at the last 8 years, 8 years ago, we had a President Trump, and therefore we had an SEC under a Trump administration. And then for the last 4 years, you mentioned President Biden. Kamala Harris obviously has been the vice president. And so we've seen SEC under that Democratic regime. So I wanted you to just compare and contrast. What did we see in terms of, how the SEC operated under both of those administrations?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. This is a good time to maybe reflect on what's happened at that point 4 years ago, what's happened over the last 4 years, right, with the SEC. And so maybe we'll take a step back almost 90 years now and talk about the SEC's core mission.
I say recent history.
So the core mission of the SEC is threefold, right? And there's three tenets that they always refer to in presentations publicly. And that's investor protection. They're there to maintain fair, orderly, and efficient markets. And then they want to facilitate capital formation. And that's really behind everything that the SEC does.
What we see when we have a shift in administrations and a shift at the chair of the SEC is we see a shift in those core tenets. Now, just to be clear, the SEC maintains all three of those parts of its mission, no matter who's in the White House and no matter who the commissioners are. So if we get back in our time machine and come back to current day, under the Trump presidency, Jay Clayton was the chair of the SEC. And when we think about Jay Clayton and the commission at that time, the core tenet of that mission that was really most important was capital formation. And those 4 years where Jay Clayton was the chairperson, we really saw that come through in the rulemaking of the SEC and the approach that was taken by the staff itself in almost everything they did, it felt like. So then we fast forward 4 years, and President Biden is president, and Gary Gensler gets appointed to the chair role within the SEC. And we've shifted those core tenets of the mission again, right? So the last 4 years, what we've seen is really that investor protection focus come through in everything that the SEC is doing. And it's just, again, it's not that they've forgotten about capital formation or fair and orderly markets, but really just the agenda demonstrated the importance that Chair Gensler has placed on investor protection, and really what we see the staff doing through their actions, their guidance and reviews and things like that is that focus on investor protection as well.
Yeah, I think that's a great compare and contrast, and I can actually personally attest to this. I was at the SEC in the Office of the Chief Accountant. I joined in 2020 while Clayton was still the chair. And then, while I was there for my 2 years, Gensler came in. And like you said, the day-to-day of what we did, in OCA, interpreting GAAP, didn't change. Obviously, that doesn't matter who's in the White House or who the chair is. But I would say the projects that we worked on to support the commission in its overall agenda certainly changed, right? Clayton, a lot of the projects was focused on, streamlining and modernizing disclosures. I'll call more of like a deregulation type approach. Then when Gensler came in, he had a very aggressive rulemaking agenda. things like climate, and they've been very active in crypto, which we'll talk about here in a minute, and OCA would then help support some of that rulemaking. So day-to-day, I agree, not expected to change, but the types of rules that the SEC may come out with and their overall, you know, regulatory approach, I think certainly we could see some shifts there. And so with that as our segue, let's get back in your time machine. I'm getting a little dizzy from flipping back. If I feel like Doc Brown, maybe you're Doc Brown instead of Tim Brown. We'll go back to the future here and look to the next 4 years. And I want to start with the Republicans. And like their party symbol, let's begin with the elephant in the room, which in my opinion is the climate rule. And just as a quick reminder, the SEC issued a final rule on climate disclosures in March of 2024, which really was a landmark rule for Gensler and the SEC, I would say. However, when it came out, it received a lot of, I'll just say, attention. And the SEC then voluntarily stayed the rule about a month later in response to a number of petitions that were filed against it, which means the rule never went effective. So, Tim, my question for you as we look forward, and I figure we could use the only objective way to predict the future to help us with this, the magic eight ball. Let me ask you a question. If we see a Republican administration get elected next month, does the climate rule go effective?
All right, Nick. Well, I'm going to have to shake up my magic eight ball here for a second. And I guess where we're going, we don't actually need roads, right? So shaking up my magic eight ball, and it says outlook not so good. Or maybe, I guess, because this is the climate rule, it's the forecast is not so good. If we think about how the climate rule came about and just what happened within the commission during that period of time, we saw the Republican commissioners dissent or vote against the rule when it came out. So it seems fairly obvious, especially since the climate rule has now been brought into the court system by conservatives, by the Republicans, that a Republican administration and a Republican-led commission is not going to be interested in furthering any climate rule that was finalized.
I'm starting you off with some softballs here, Tim. I don't think you needed a magic eight ball for that one. All right, so here's my next question. Let's say the rule wouldn't go effective, we think, you know, if Trump gets elected. What would the SEC do with that rule?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And that's a lot cloudier prediction to try and make. But I think there's a couple of potential paths within the commission itself, if we think about it. The first would be that the new commission would do nothing. They would just leave the rule as stayed. It's been stayed under the current commission. Certainly if, you know, before this commission ends, they take away that stay, that could change things. But let's just assume for argument's sake that it's stayed when a new commission begins. There may not be anything that they have to do. Secondly, I think they would actually may need to introduce new rulemaking. The climate rule is finalized. It went through the commission's due process. It was voted out and finalized. So there is a regulation. The regulation just never went effective because of the stay. So they'd have to go through more due process likely to take another commission action to do something with that final rule.
Which would be interesting, right? Because we just went through this to get the climate rule itself passed. And there was a ton of comment letter activities, most of which I think supported the rule. So if we've now had rulemaking going the other way, I don't know how that would work.
So I think the third option, Nick, that the SEC might have, which is really outside of their control, is they let the courts kind of run through due course. And so what does the court ultimately decide? The court could actually vacate the rule itself, which we've seen the courts do with other rules. The court could actually send it back to the commission for a rethink. In which case we would expect that they would be saying that it needs to be changed in some way, shape, or form that they had decided. Or the court could actually decide that the rule is fine, which would be an interesting development if it were a Republican commission at that point in time. So the one thing we need to keep in mind is the Loper-Bright ruling from the Supreme Court this past year, which overturned the Chevron doctrine.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought this up because I feel like this has been a big question recently, not just for SEC rulemaking, but just regulatory in general. So can you just explain what happened in Loper and what the Chevron doctrine is?
Sure. So the Chevron doctrine really gave federal agencies the ability to interpret places where their remit was maybe loosely defined by Congress previously. And by the Supreme Court overturning the Chevron doctrine through the Loper-Bright ruling, what it really does is gives the judiciary or the court system the ability to make that determination themselves. So it introduces for agencies such as the SEC a lot of judicial uncertainty in terms of the rules that they're putting out. So I do think that moving forward, this could have an impact on not only the rules that are out there, but their agenda moving forward.
Yeah, and this seems like something that's going to be relevant no matter who gets elected next month, right? It seems to have shifted at least some of the power from the regulatory bodies to the courts. And no matter who's running the SEC, anything they do could in theory be challenged by the other side, right? And end up in the court system somehow. So I don't think our magic eight ball can help us predict how that's going to go. But all right, let's turn to the next item that I wanted to talk about under a Republican administration and one that's been getting a lot of press lately, and that's crypto. I would say, you know, it's probably fair that the Gensler SEC has been pretty heavy on regulation with crypto, specifically with, you know, whether or not it's a security and how the Howey test is applied and all that good stuff. So my question to you is, would we expect there to be a different posture towards crypto going forward if Trump ends up getting elected?
All right, let me shake up my magic eight ball again here. It's coming up, Outlook good, which is interesting, right? Because I think if we again go back to the Jay Clayton administration at the SEC, what we really saw was a lot of resistance to crypto at that time. We shifted to a Gensler administration and we saw the same thing, which is super interesting, I think, as we look forward. However, I think what we've seen in the news more recently is that it seems like Trump is really leaning heavily on cryptocurrencies. And so we may see a shift in focus under a new Trump administration if that were to occur.
Yeah, so this might be one of those cases where history may not repeat itself. Yeah. All right, and let me tie this into financial reporting. You know, obviously the big SEC development on the crypto accounting front over the last few years was the issuance of SAB 121. And again, for those who aren't familiar with it, it basically says if a company has an obligation to safeguard crypto assets, they need to record a liability and an asset, which would be measured at fair value. And that has also gotten a ton of press, you know, when it came out. And recently, we've seen some remarks from the chief accountant related to how SAB 121 applies in certain fact patterns. And so I thought it'd be at least worth asking, do we see any developments on that front in terms of what happens in the election?
All right, one more shake here, Nick. I'll try and make this a quick one. All right, it's coming up. Ask again later. I think, you know, what we need to look at here is really recent history. So what we had over the summer was bipartisan support. And these days, how often in Washington, D.C. do we have bipartisan support on anything at all?
I feel like you'd never hear about that, but I guess crypto accounting of all things is one. So
yeah, the Hill came together on this one and they actually put out legislation that would have repealed SAB 121. And just as a reminder for everyone that's listening, SAB 121 is a staff accounting bulletin. That's really just staff guidance. It's not a regulation. It's not a rule of the SEC. But the staff did put out this guidance about how to account for cryptocurrencies. And the Hill said, no, this is not where we want to be. However, when it made its way to the White House, President Biden ended up vetoing that legislation. And Congress didn't have enough votes to override that veto, so it remained veto. And what President Biden said was that the SEC has the expertise. They've been looking at this, you know, for a lot longer than anyone in Congress has been looking at it. And he believed that it was appropriate to let the SEC have that guidance out there.
So if we have a change in president, who knows, right? If the bipartisan support would come back and what that veto decision would be. So I can understand why you said ask again later.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's tough to know exactly what's going to happen, you know, under either, I guess, President Trump or a President Harris moving forward.
All right, so let's switch to the other side of the aisle and the theme of bipartisan support. Let's reach across to the other side of the aisle and let's talk about the Democrats. I imagine we would expect a lot less movement in the agenda if we end up with another Democratic administration for the next 4 years. You know, it's a continuation of the same political party. I mentioned Harris has been vice president, et cetera. So with that, Tim, I thought it might be worth spending just a minute on talking about what are some of the major items on the SEC's current rulemaking agenda.
That's a great question. So Chair Gensler got through, I think, as you mentioned earlier, just one of the most aggressive agendas we've seen in modern history, I think, within the SEC.
Yep.
And a lot of that agenda was focused on ESG activities. So what remains, at least within the Division of Corporation Finance, and then actually some rulemaking agendas for some of the other divisions as well, includes some of those ESG-related proposals, and specifically some DEI proposals, right? So we have the human capital disclosure proposal, which has been on the agenda for a couple of years under Chair Gensler.
Is this the S in ESG?
Yeah, I think that's right, right? I think we have debates all the time about what is E, what is S, what is G. This definitely seems like the S. This is probably more the easy one, right? So human capital disclosures, what is the composition of your workforce? What do, you know, who are the people that are working within your organization? What are the differences between men and women, race, and all of the like that we see disclosed out there? And look, some of those adjustments were made under Clayton when we had the Reg S-K amendments just a few short years ago. But I think within that rulemaking, a lot of these disclosures ended up being more what I'll call watered down.
Okay.
And just didn't have a lot of teeth to them. So the expectation for this proposal was always that this was going to be everything that was left on the cutting room floor at the end of the day, just put back into the rule and a lot more disclosure. And look, we see some of these exchanges that have their own disclosure rules already as well. And so this is the SEC putting more teeth on some of that. We also had a board diversity disclosure proposal that we have not seen yet. So I think if Kamala Harris wins the presidency in November, then what we're going to see is just that. We're going to see the continuation of this agenda, and we'll probably see some of these proposals that we've been waiting on under Chair Gensler probably come to the forefront, maybe as the earlier agenda items under a future commission.
All right. So just to recap, we think that if, you know, Kamala Harris gets elected as president next week, it's likely we would see the commission move forward with those two items, even if we have a new chair.
I think that's a fair assumption at this point. You know, but I can shake up my magic eight ball here one last time for you, Nick.
I think we might as well, right? Let's get our money's worth.
All right. It's saying most likely. So I think we're in the right spot here.
All right. So with that, let's wrap up the conversation. And I thought it might be good just to end on a note that we've kind of touched on throughout the conversation. But I think regardless of who wins the presidential election in November, there's some things at the commission that are just not going to change. And I don't know if you want to just spend a minute talking about what our listeners should continue to expect into the future, no matter what happens.
Absolutely. So if we get back in our Wayback Machine, you know, and go back 90 years, the SEC celebrated its 90th anniversary, right, just recently. Yeah, I mean, look, obviously the SEC today looks very different than 1934. But the more things change, the more they stay the same. The SEC's core mission, the work that the great work, really, that the SEC staff does on a day-to-day basis to interpret accounting rules, to review filings, to bring enforcement actions against bad actors, and really kind of maintain those orderly financial markets that's part of their core mission and tenet of that core mission, that's all going to stay the same. Under a Clayton administration, we saw a lot of enforcement action. We were talking about increased enforcement action then. Yep. And under Gensler, we saw increased enforcement action. We saw rulemakings going out, trying to clean things up that hadn't been touched in decades under Clayton. And we saw different types of rulemakings under Gensler. Rulemaking will continue. Companies are going to need to continue to pay attention to what the SEC does, no matter what. And as you said, this really isn't going to change in 2025 or any year beyond that.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, you know, I worked there for 2 years, and probably the most rewarding part of it was the mission. I mean, that really is front and center of everything that's done at the SEC. And it's pretty cool. You know, you really are in a role of protecting the public and serving the public. And so with that, I think, Tim, you have fulfilled your mission today of helping us predict the future, even if you had a magic eight ball to help you do it. So thank you for joining.
Thanks, Nick. And I'm going to go put this magic eight ball away for next time, I guess.
Thank you for listening. And if you enjoyed this episode, which I hope you did, please give us 5 stars and make sure you subscribe on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, wherever you listen to podcasts. We've got some really great content coming up that you will not want to miss. And in the meantime, you can check out our website at frv.kpmg.us. We've got some really great materials on whatever financial reporting topic you're interested in. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time.